Thanks for listening to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt podcast, bringing to you the best voices on the stories and issues that matter. Helping make it all possible is the generous partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. Here's another piece I'll trust you enjoy. Mike Pence. Good morning, Mr. Vice President. Welcome back to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Hugh, it is great to be with you. Thank you. Thank you for that welcome. And thank you. Thank you for having me on a day so important in the life of our family with the publication of my autobiography, So Help Me God. It's a great way to start the day on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
I have spent the last 96 hours, actually, reading So Help Me God, and it's a magnificent read. I want everyone to go out and get it, and you will be rewarded. I had a caller earlier today said, why don't you talk to Mike Pence about what happened in Indiana with the Art Riffer? I said, there's a whole chapter on that. You ought to go get the book. And so I knocked them out. But let's start by telling people why I chose That's Life. I always take my music cues out of the book. And I didn't want to play, oh, Indiana, Indiana, because, you know, Ohio State just thrashed the Hoosiers. So to explain to people why I picked my That's Life by Frank Sinatra.
You know, the story that I try and tell in So Help Me God is really a story about God's faithfulness, about the central role that my decision to put my faith in Jesus Christ played, the role that my wife and family have played. But someone told me not long ago they think the secret star of So Help Me God is my late father, Ed Pence. And he was a great fan of Frank Sinatra. Dad's been gone 30 years, but I will tell you that song that you brought us in with, Hugh, still, when I hear it, I can't think of... I can't help but think of my dad. I can't help but see him smiling. It really, in so many ways, he was a man of a profound faith. He was a combat veteran, but he lived the American dream. And
he is the star of So Help Me God, Mr. Vice President, because making the four boys go out and make that sign for the farmer and people, we don't have time to do that. People should read it just for that book, but everybody deserves a father like Ed Pence, and nobody deserves to lose them at the age of 58. And that rallying from that, and your mom being a widow for so many years is also, she's a hero too. I love books for the when they get into parents, because parenting matters, and you talk a lot about parenting, and I appreciate that, Mr. Vice President. Let me ask you something else in here. Both are a successful member of the House. You ran successfully for a leadership position. You ran unsuccessfully for a leadership position. So let me start with some news. What should the House GOP do right away with Kevin McCarthy?
I think Kevin McCarthy should be the next Speaker of the United States House of Representatives. I served with Kevin when I was in leadership the last time we defeated Nancy Pelosi, and Kevin McCarthy, Steve Scalise, their entire team have led this conference to a victory. I know people would like to see that majority larger. I traveled to 35 states in the last year, but make no mistake about it, Kevin McCarthy is going to be a great Speaker of the House, and having the Republicans in the majority in the House of Representatives is going to give us a foundation to begin to turn this country back to the policies that we were advancing at home and abroad under the Trump-Pence administration, and I couldn't be more supportive of the next Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy.
I wish people would read, journalists would read, So Help Me God, for how this works, because you actually detail when you ran unsuccessfully against John Boehner and when you ran successfully for conference chair. They'll know how it works if they read So Help Me God. Second question, you have been the president of the Senate, and therefore you're in a great position to opine on whether or not Mitch McConnell ought to be back as leader. I've endorsed him. I hope it's not even a lot of drama. What do you think?
When you think of the accomplishments of the Trump-Pence administration, whether it be historic tax relief, the largest increased investment in our national defense since the days of Ronald Reagan, whether it be the efforts to secure our border, reduce illegal immigration by 90%, unleash American energy, or maybe most important of all, see 300 conservatives confirmed to our courts, including three Supreme Court justices, none of that would have been possible without 2 years where Mitch McConnell was a Senate Majority Leader. He is an enormously talented legislator, and he deserves to continue to lead Republicans in the United States Senate. Mitch McConnell has my full support as the Republican leader in the United States Senate.
There are two headlines for this interview. I want one more, Mr. Vice President. I want to take your time and go through this thing page by page if I have to. You endorsed Ted Cruz, as you recount in So Help Me God, in 2016. and tonight you are going to hear your former colleague in the presidency and vice presidency, Donald Trump announced he's running again. Will that impact your decision on whether to seek the presidency?
You know, the only decision Karen and I have made with regard to our future is that we're not going to let anybody else make that decision for us. You know, I heard a long time ago there's two kinds of people in politics, Hugh. There's people that are called and people that are driven.
Dan Coats told you that, didn't he?
He did. You've got a great memory. Well, and so help me God, you know, people will be able to read that. I've been both. Yep. I let my ambition get ahead of me early in my life. But, you know, ever since we were elected to Congress and then governor and then to serve as vice president, Karen and I have always sought the Lord's will in our life. We've approached decisions prayerfully. We've sought to go where we're called, and that's how we'll make this decision after the first of the year.
You know, Mr. Vice President, one last political question, and I really do want to go to the details of So Help Me God, because it's actually inspiring and important for people to read. But in 2016, and you detail watching this with some amazement, the former president just knocked off Jeb, and then he knocked off Chris Christie, then he knocked off Marco, and he went down line. Do you think those who oppose him, whether you are not, whether you're on that stage or not, and you haven't made your decision yet, should they get together and organize beforehand to avoid the serial knockoffs that the former president is so good at? I mean, he's very good at this.
Look, the American people love competition, Hugh.
Yes, we do.
Karen and I have gone to the Indy 500 race probably, you know, between the two of us probably over 50 times. And, you know, they have 33 cars out on the track, and they drop the green flag and they go. And, you know, I have great confidence in Republican primary voters that we're going to sort out who should be the standard bearer of our party in the days ahead. Karen and I will prayerfully consider what role we might play in that, but I'm confident that Republican voters around the country are going to choose a leader that's going to lead our nation back to the policies and kind of leadership that'll bring this nation to even greater heights than ever before.
You know, in So Help Me God, you detail that then President Obama was invited by you to speak when you were the conference chair. Earlier in that conference, by the way, Dennis Prager and I spoke at your invitation, and you spent lunch that time. You won't remember this, but you made a beeline for my table, not because I was there, because my son was there, and you spent the entire lunch talking to him. I note that you note throughout, folks who focus on kids, they include President Bush and President Trump. Why was that so important to you in 2010? Why is it so important that you would recall it with W and Donald?
Well, I just remember when I was first elected to Congress that Karen and I always brought our kids in tow to any time that we were around President Bush at Republican gatherings. And I was always struck by the fact that my kids, who were 5, 6, and 7 at the time, would get more attention than I would from the President of the United States. And it made such a tremendous impression on me. You know, if you know the Pences, you know a family. And other than our faith in God, the center of our life is our kids, two of whom are military families today, all three of whom we're incredibly proud of. And so for me in my public life, I've always tried to emulate those lessons learned, to really keep focus on our faith and keep focus not only on our family, but the men, women, and children of people in the public debate.
You know, you just mentioned something. There are a lot of similarities in the Hewitt and the Pence stories. I also have two kids in the military families, and I've learned a lot from that. I have learned an enormous amount that I did not know. What have you learned from being the father of an active duty military person, the father of an active duty spouse?
Well, you know, my dad was a combat veteran in Korea, and I write about that in So Help Me God. And my son's a captain in the United States Marine Corps. My son-in-law is a lieutenant in the United States Navy. And I can just tell you that for me, what I've learned is what a joy it is to see your children do better than you did before. One of the regrets of my life was that in 1977, when I graduated from high school, I had a desire to go into the service, but that combat veteran actually said, you go to college, and if you want to join the military after that, do that. And I never got back to it. But my son and all of our kids have all been such a big part of our life in public service, that to see him, to see my daughter and my son-in-law, and to see our youngest daughter also, it's all of them have answered the call to give back to this country, and it's a frankly, they're all my heroes, Hugh, and you know what I'm talking about.
I do. I have the same thing. But I had no idea how hard it is to be a military spouse. I really didn't have any idea until I saw it up close.
Something I'm probably proudest of with Karen Pence is that when she was Second Lady of the United States, and maybe it was because we had military spouses in our family, our incredible daughter-in-law, Sarah, our daughter, Charlotte. But Karen spent a good part of her service as Second Lady of the United States focused on reforms that would support military families and military spouses in particular. In fact, I had the privilege of speaking at the Marine Corps Ball last week at my son's Marine Corps base.
Oh, that is fun.
And Karen sent along, you know it is, and Karen sent along bracelets that she'd been passing out for years to military spouses, and I've actually come across families around the country who've showed me their bracelet and expressed their appreciation. Karen calls them the hometown heroes, and the spouses of those who serve in the uniform of the United States, who deploy overseas, they look after, they really are the hometown heroes.
Yeah, I went to a Navy birthday with my Navy son last week, and I heard a couple of great Navy people speak, and it's really special, and you don't know it unless you're a veteran. But Karen Pence is an Air Force brat. Like, my wife is a Marine Corps brat, and she always get asked, why didn't your kids go in the Marines? He said, my dad's turned over in his grave. And why didn't your son go into the Air Force if he wanted to fly, since Karen's an Air Force brat?
That's where we about got it covered in the Pence family. Karen's dad was in the
Yes.
Army. My dad was in the Army, and we got a Marine and we got Navy. But you know, I think for our son, I think he was inspired by his grandfather's example, but also I think he was inspired by my brother Greg, who is a member of Congress today. Greg was in the United States Marine Corps, and I write about a very long day we had back in 1983 when my brother was actually stationed in Beirut in the weeks before what became the worst peacetime loss in the history of the Marine Corps. 200 Marines fell in what was in fact the first shot fired in the war on terror at the Beirut airport. And We praise God that my brother was already shipboard at that time. He came home to his family and lived a great life and is now serves in the Congress. But I think he had an impact on Michael. And but we're just proud of all of them. And
one of the great things about So Help Me God is that you bring people into a political family. And I want to jump ahead in my outline to Audrey giving you static over the decision to suspend Syrian relocation. And the reason is people don't really know what political families or media families are like. And there's a lot of static in them over stuff. But the good kid brings it to you and they don't broadcast it. I watch Ronald Reagan struggle with his children talking about publicly what they disagree with. I appreciate that Audrey has not done that publicly. Did she ever? But you don't tell me the conclusion. What happened to the Syrian refugee resettlement program after you gave her static? When did you come back to it?
Well, I was governor of the state of Indiana at the time. There was a terrorist attack in Europe where what we saw was that Syrian refugees were using, or terrorists rather, were using the Syrian refugee program to make their way into Europe to do violence. And I made the decision to suspend the Syrian refugee program in the state of Indiana. But my daughter, as I write in So Help Me God, had literally spent time in the Middle East. She had been to a refugee camp in Jordan, and has a great heart for people in the region. And, you know, it became one of those moments. She gave me permission to share in the book that we clashed. She felt very strongly that I was wrong to suspend the refugee program in the wake of that terrorist attack. I sat her down and said, as governor of Indiana, the safety and security of the people of the state was my highest priority, and I would err on the side of security until I was convinced that we were doing the kind of vetting that was necessary to ensure that no one was coming into our state that represented a threat to our people. And at the end of the day, we agreed to disagree, but, you know, the thing I'm proudest of about our kids is that we raised them to think for themselves. We really did. We tried, as the Bible says, to train them up in the way they should go, and the belief that when they're old, they'll not depart from it. We taught them about our Christian faith, raised them into church. But one of the lodestars for Karen and me has always been that our kids think for themselves. We have enormous respect for them. And to this very day, we continue to be very, very close to all of our children and incredibly proud of who they are.
I love the story about attending the commissioning of your son after Officers Candidate School at Quantico. I've been there before for different people, not my kids, and I've been at an OCS for my kid, and I just think it's you just swell up, and they identified his fiance without doing so. I just thought it was a well-written. Let me go, very well-written story. Let me go to the controversy that my caller called about earlier, the RFRA controversy in Indiana.
Sure.
It's on page 133. I have not seen you. Literally not seen you since Rick Grenell was sworn in as our ambassador to Germany with his husband, Matt, there. And you held the family Bible for Rick and you swore. I've not seen you since that moment. And my question to you is, what do you think the Republicans ought to do about the Same-Sex Marriage Act that is going to come to the floor in the Senate today or tomorrow that Rob Portman, Susan Collins and others are sponsoring? I would vote for it because there is no attempt to overturn Obergefell, and it does protect religious liberty. You wrote in So Help Me God, you quote Micah 4:4, everyone will sit under their own vine and under their own fig tree, and no one will make them afraid.
Right.
How does that play into what Republicans ought to vote on the new Marriage Act in the Senate?
Well, I'm actually glad your caller raised the issue. It was... the title of that chapter in So Help Me God is Lessons Learned Defending Religious Liberty.
Yep.
You know, Indiana enacted the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. It was immediately, almost overnight, it was mischaracterized by the national media and the political left in the country as somehow a license to discriminate when in fact, some 30 states at the time had Religious Freedom Acts, and President Bill Clinton had signed the federal Religious Freedom Law. It was in the days leading up to the Obergefell decision that would legalize same-sex marriage that there was a desire to ensure that people with deeply held religious beliefs that I share, that marriages between one man and one woman, would continue to be able to hold those beliefs in work and in worship and in their lives. And but I tried to be candid. I tried to be humble about lessons learned along the way, because as I said once again in the book, that you know, the people of Indiana are the greatest people in the world. They're loving, they're caring, they're generous, they're strong-willed. But Hoosier hospitality is not a slogan, and we took some steps to protect constitutional liberties, but also to make it clear that Hoosiers don't believe in discrimination against anyone. I don't think anyone should ever be harassed or mistreated for who they are, who they love, or what they believe. And I think we landed there. And, you know, I'll always hold the view that I have about traditional marriage, Hugh. And if I was in the Congress of the United States, I'd vote in a way consistent with my values. But, you know, I truly do believe at the end of the day in Indiana, we squared it by simply standing on the express language of the Indiana Constitution. You know, one of the ways I think God used that experience in my life was, 6 months after that controversy in Indiana, we were able to bring the state back together by focusing on the religious liberty, the freedom of speech, and or freedom of religion and freedom of conscience that's in the Indiana Constitution. And I write about that, and it would be another half a dozen years later in another January that with that lesson enshrined in my heart, I would simply focus on what the Constitution of the United States had to say and to stand there four square.
Thanks for listening to the Town Hall Review. Our program is coming today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you're enjoying the podcast, please tell a friend to go to Town Hall Review and sign up as well today.